Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Thank you very much for joining us. And when I say thank you very much, I actually mean it. Not in a Pep Guardiola passive-aggressive, I'd really like to give you a Chinese burn kind of way. In fact, we're all as happy as Julen Lopetegui after Luke de Jong, oh yes, Luke de Jong, scored the winner in El Gran Derby. The thing I find with La Liga TV is that everybody seems very keen to ask everybody else what formation of Real Betis playing. But nobody knows. In fact, nobody's really known what formation Real Betis have played for years. Barca are top, so Ernesto Valverde is a tactical genius after all. Only a huge football brain would think to say to Lionel Messi, see if you can kick all those free kicks into the goal, Lionel. Barca are a different beast at home, they say. Yeah, sort of. They're about as scary as a guinea pig against Slavia Prague. Real Madrid are rubbish. That's last week's script. Real Madrid are great. They've scored 10 goals since we were last with you. 16 since they last conceded. Karim Benzema is now better than Ferenc Puskas, who, to be fair, did smoke taps on the bench, even though he had so much Brill Cream in his hair, he could have caught fire at any moment. If Benzema is the present of Real Madrid, Puskas is the past, and the future could be Take Kubo. The Japanese prodigy is ripping it up on loan at Mallorca at the age of just 12. We'll have a look at the rest of the results. It's 6-6 for Morata, fifth place for Real Sociedad, who are actually top on Friday night. The only goalless draw involved, drum roll, prepare for the shock, Getafe. But don't you dare call them dirty and negative. Nobody likes us, and we do care. More on Jose Bordalas later. But Terry, the big question of the weekend is, who are you supporting, KSI or Logan Paul?
Do you know, I know of the names. That's it. No more.
That's because you're older than 12. Yeah, you're older than 12. Yeah. So, it's past your mind.
Yeah, I don't care who wins.
Right. Shock news. Well, I don't know if it is shock, but KSI has won. Sevilla. Even more importantly,
you've
Sevilla.
Sponsored, John. I was going to watch it on playback.
Yes.
Won't bother now.
You've actually paid pay-per-view to watch a couple of YouTubers pour at each other. There we are. That's what the world is. Or you could have watched the Seville Derby. You that's the alternative that you could have been watching this weekend. And I enjoyed it, Terry. It was good. I thought it had the right amount of needle, the right amount of good football. The better team won in the end, settled by a good goal, and obviously, and we saw what it meant, didn't we, with Lopetegui's celebrations at the end.
Yeah, and I think we are seeing a really good version of Sevilla. I think their transfer business so far looks to have been really, really good. I think the only downside is they have been struggling to score goals, and yet every player that left is top of their goal scoring in their various leagues. So it's been hard work for them to apply the finishing touches. Luke de Jong, I think his all-round performance was really good. They've persevered with him, and I can understand why. I was sticking up for him to a degree, but of course, as any striker knows, you've got to eventually start scoring goals, and what a big goal as well. I mean, it's all well and good getting the goal here and a goal there, but to get the winner for him in a severe day in the Grand Derby, the Sevilla Derby, it will really boost his confidence. I got to see an interview with him after the game, and he spent absolutely ages before he said the word I. Everything was we and us. And you can see how he's endeared himself to the supporters, the teammates. He's an unselfish player. And it was just rewarded. He got his goal, which topped off an all-round performance. I thought Betis didn't handle the situation well the first 20 minutes of the game. I thought the anxiety overtook them. Sevilla started the better. And in fairness to Betis, they gradually crept back into the game. But I agree with you. I think there was always a slight difference in class quality. But I think that is probably down to, when you look at the players, I don't think there's a great deal of difference. But I think when you look at the respective positions in the league, with the start that both teams have had to the season, I think you could understand why Betis feel the pressure more going into that game, because it wasn't just the fact they needed to beat Sevilla. Because it was a derby match, they need the points. They're in the 17th position after that defeat. There's 4-point gap between them and Celta in the bottom three. So that's why the pressure was on the home team more, because of their need for the points, desperation for points. And also because 95% of the stadium is their supporters. So I didn't think they handled the pressure early on well, but they got back into it. It was a type of game where, as a neutral, we didn't want it to end. I could easily have done another 10, 15 minutes of that match. Mind you, that come on the back of having commentated on Hetafe Osasuna, so of course I would.
Don't you say nasty things about Jose Bordalas, otherwise he'll be reading his dossier to you about how it's everybody else and not them. It's a pure coincidence that all their games are terrible, and it's always the other guy who's doing it. It's just the evidence. Is that going to do us for Hetafe Osasuna? We'll tick that one off and say we've done that game. Betis formation, Terry. I'm going to do the same as everyone who works on the Liga TV with you and say, I don't understand their formation, and he makes changes, and it's quite difficult. And I know it's difficult anyway, because obviously if you're not in the stadium, then you don't have the wide view of the formation. But I don't understand what his project. I don't understand what Rubies Betis is about yet.
No, I think he's made concessions to the past, to what was the style of Kike Setien. So we're gradually seeing him creeping back towards, now we're seeing a three at the back, we're seeing wing backs. And I think he's kind of allowed the players a little bit of a license to play the way that they did then. But of course, they weren't winning games and they weren't scoring goals under Kike Setien, hence the reason he lost his job. So I think it's like so many managers now. I spoke about Barcelona needing a leader, needing Valverde to lead. Still think that's the case now. And that's on the back of that awful performance in midweek and quite an average performance yesterday against Celta, where they owed the victory purely to Lionel Messi. So I think Betis are the same. They need a manager he's fighting for his job. I don't think the defeat against Sevilla will cost him his job. I think the performance was enough for them to believe that he's going to still keep Betis in the division. But that's a far cry from what we were Betis supporters would have been hoping for at the start of the season. So I think he's hampered by the fact that Javi Garcia is out injured, William Carvalho is out injured. So he's making do with a makeshift holding midfield player. Apart from the first 20 minutes, I didn't think there was an awful lot of difference between the two teams. But when it came to applying the finishing touch, particularly the last goal, lovely skill from Banega to evade a challenge and thread the pass through to De Jong, and a smashing finish from Luke De Jong. But Loren Moron, he came up with a good goal himself. You know, Betis have got good players, but it hasn't settled down yet, clearly, under Rubi as manager.
Let's skip on. You mentioned Barcelona, so let's do them. So the result looks fine, doesn't it? They're top of the league. They won. Yeah. Messi scored his 52nd hat-trick, his 52nd free kick. The man is a phenomenon. To be fair, he was responding to Lucas Olaza's free kick, which are very similar, in fact, to the ones. And I think it was said in comment. The Olaza free kick looking like a Messi free kick. And then, of course, he's like, no, this is a Messi free kick. And then, obviously, can I just go off the point and say, the only people who still use the expression carbon copy are football commentators. No one has used a carbon copy, but must be 40 years since some people used a carbon copy, but football commentators.
Just making a note. It's a valid point and a great point. I will never, ever use that again.
Yeah, I'm not sure you did. Honestly, it's so widespread, people refer to a carbon copy. And there must be anyone younger than me must be thinking, what is a carbon copy?
Other than stone wall. And stone wall. It's a stone wall carbon copy, John.
but tell us then. So and reflect on that dreadful performance against Slavia Prague. We, you know, with all due respect, as we like to say on this podcast, to Slavia Prague, Barcelona shouldn't be labouring against them, should they? And limping through the Champions League.
No, I mean, they've made life difficult for themselves. We do all assume that they will still get through. But it was the performance against Slavia Prague. I was bored, trying to think of another phrase to use, another term to use. But it was boring to watch, and that hasn't been the case for Barcelona for over a decade. And it was, I made the point about that we got stuck into Valverde last week about needing a leader of the team, and nothing changed with the midweek performance. There was no improvement. I see the game yesterday was solely reliant on Messi's brilliance. I mean, he gets the penalty, takes the penalty, and then it's 1-1. Him chasing back. I didn't think it was a free kick anyway, but it was an excellent set piece taken by Lucas Alazo, as you say. And you're thinking, that is a Messi set piece, a lookalike. And then Messi plants two in the top corner. The first one, we're kind of, oh, yeah, that's fair enough, standard Messi. And then to do it exactly the same. And as he's lining up taking it, the goalkeeper must be thinking, well, there's the obvious one, but surely he can't do that again. Is he going to hope I creep across and he wraps it into the opposite corner? Is he just going to go with power? Is he going to go under the wall? It's keeping the goalkeeper guessing. So he just does exactly the same technique again. And it does paper up the cracks.
No, you were right the first time.
Yeah, it papers up the cracks at Barcelona that still exist. It's disjointed. Could they win the Champions League? Yeah, because we're a long way away from the March, the knockout stages, when you've got Messi, you've got a chance, when you've got Suarez, Griezmann, Dembele, De Jong, Busquets, Semedo, Jordi Alba, Gerard Pique, Umtiti, Lenglet. The talent, the quality is there, but they have to be playing a lot better than what we see now. Griezmann, slight improvement, but he's a million miles away from what Barcelona were expecting. So there's still issues that have to be sorted out. I've always said, and regular listeners of the podcast will know, that you have to just get through the first half of the season in all competitions and hope then that the second half, it takes its toll. More games are coming along. The games are coming thick and fast. There's an international campaign at the end of the season. And, you know, if you're a Barcelona or a Real Madrid, then you just hope you're involved in all the competitions. And then when the crunch comes, you're in good shape in terms of players being fit, being confident, and, you know, having a sort of the winning mentality. So at the moment, I would say Barcelona, the way they're playing, won't win the Champions League. But clearly Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, I wouldn't say Valencia, the three of them have still got the quality to be able to surprise people, and this will be a distant memory, but there's a lot of work to do for Barcelona to get anywhere near the level that they should be.
Yeah, and not too many optimistic signs are there at the moment either. Shall we talk about Real Madrid before we take a break? So, I mean, tremendous week for them. Last week, you said they weren't terrible. You said they were okay against Betis. They just didn't finish it off. But this week, they certainly did finish it off. A couple of penalties along the way. Benzema moved above Puskas in the Real Madrid all-time goal-scoring charts. Valverde with a goal at the end. So, all very good signs. And, of course, while we're talking Champions League, young Rodrigo, sensational hat-trick in midweek as they put six past them. And they're a frustrating team, Real Madrid, aren't they? Because, as you say, they are capable of winning the Champions League, but too many times we're watching them thinking, oh, this isn't very good. And then, you know, when they put it together, they play aggressively, they play on the front foot, and they all work hard. They remind you just how good they can be.
Exactly. You look at all departments, all positions. Yesterday, they were all brilliant. You'd give them all at least an 8 out of 10. And they were motivated by the fact they got their backsides kicked by Eibar last season. And that the fallout from that went on for a considerable amount of time. We're still talking about it almost a year on. And everyone expecting that this was going to be a tough game. The weather was lashing down. And yet we saw possibly Real Madrid's best performance of the season, because every single player contributed. The team selection, there's no question marks about that. Surprised that Rodrigo wasn't starting on the back of that hat-trick, but Lucas Vazquez came in. And I kind of understood the selection prior to the game because of the opponents, because of where they were playing, because of what happened last season. So instead of playing the teenager, play Lucas Vazquez, who knows exactly what he's going to be heading into. We know his attributes, his work rate and spirit. Valverde's been excellent in midfield. Modric was terrific. The two that stood out for me, funny enough, were, I mean, the link-up from Benzema and Hazard is getting better all the time. But the two that stood out for me were Ramos and Varane. because generally against Eibar, they sling the ball forward quickly. They play two up front, and the two up front, Sergi Emerick, Kike Garcia, they can get under the Kike Gonzalez. They can get under the skin of centre backs, and then they can sense there's a weakness. They get sling the ball in the channel. They chase lost causes. They challenge for things in the air. Yet Varane and Ramos were impeccable. They never gave them a sniff. They're both completely taken out of the game in terms of no threat whatsoever to Real Madrid. And the platform was there for Real Madrid to go on and play some really good football. And I think motivated by the fact that they got embarrassed in that stadium last season.
We need to sort of crack on today, because you're in Barcelona, aren't you, Terry, tonight? You're in the studios in Barcelona. So we're not looking at many questions tonight, but thank you to everyone who got in touch. We will have time next week because there are no games next week. So we'll link up again next week, and we'll take a lot more questions next week, which you can send to us via the La Liga Weekly Twitter page, and also go on the Facebook page as well, La Liga Weekly, and send us some questions. But Zen Green Yoda is happy this week, Terry. I'll just give him a nudge, because he's been last couple of weeks not so happy. Real Madrid, my beloved club, finally looking like the Vikingos, the Midnight Marauders. Zidane has astutely realised the base of Casemiro, and Valverde gives our team balance. The way you rotate a fresh Kroos and Modric to create offensively, and Benzema is in shape. Hazard finally waking up. He's certainly looking, just on that the last point, Hazard is looking lively. He's looking like the player that we've watched a lot for Chelsea.
Definitely. I think there were signs of that. There have been signs in recent weeks. And I know I don't want him to play safe. That's the point I've made about Hazard. I'm making it about Griezmann as well. When sometimes players go to big clubs, no matter how big a star they are, they want to be accepted, and they feel that wrongly the way to be accepted is to conform and to play it safe. And I think Hazard's been guilty of that. What I want to see is Hazard being willing to take a risk, lose the ball on the odd occasion, because he's trying to do something that you only spend approaching 100 million on a player that's capable of doing that. So he's capable of beating three players and setting up chances for teammates, taking chances himself. That's why you spend the money on them. No one really cares about how many times, as long as they don't do it too often, of course, but the best done, he's one of the best players. I mean, he was brilliant at Chelsea. He's been brilliant for Belgium in the big tournaments, the competitions. And I think finally for Real Madrid, he's showing his true form, beginning to now. Still room for improvement as well, though, which is the good thing for viewers of La Liga.
Right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the games we haven't yet talked about. Welcome back. Yeah. So get in touch with us next week via the Twitter page at La Liga Weekly, and send us some questions for next week. Last week, Tom asked us to name the best 11, excluding European clubs. I must admit, I haven't done it. So we'll maybe have a think about ahead of next week, and maybe remind people on the Twitter the last couple of days before we record. So you know, work out your best 11 without the top clubs involved. Right, Atletico. Terry, again, another mixed week for them, wasn't it? With a disappointing European performance. But then they bounced back against Espanyol, having gone behind. And it was good to see a strong, combative performance from Alvaro Morata.
Yeah, no, he was the reason they won that game today. I mean, when Sergi Dada scored the goal for Espanyol, it wasn't against a run of play. It wasn't a massive shock. And they were on the verge of crisis, losing to Bayer Leverkusen. They've been unconvincing in La Liga. They're drawing too many games. They're drawing games against opponents they shouldn't be drawing against, lacking goals. And they needed someone to, in particular, one person to lead them, to stand up. And it's a big help if it's your centre forward. So the impact he had on the game was massive. And at 27 now, it's about time. You know, he's shown glimpses of it for Spain, for Real Madrid, for Chelsea, Juventus. But Atletico, you know, spent a lot of money to bring him in. And there's been competition for places, him and Costa, João Félix, Correa's, four very good strikers. But they need one to hit the back of the net on a regular basis. It's great to see him doing it. I'm not convinced he's going to do it for the rest of the season. I'd love to see that, and hopefully is the case for Atletico and their supporters. But this, you know, I think it's about time that at 27, he shows his true worth. I've always liked him. I think he's big, strong, dynamic. He's quick. He runs in behind. He stretches defences. He's everything you'd like to see in a centre forward. So it's about time, and I'm glad.
So Espanyol, there have been signs of improvement since Machin has come in, especially in Europe. You know, a 6-0 win in Europe suggests that they are not a terrible team. However, a little gap has appeared, hasn't it, at the bottom? Because, as you say, Betis is 17th, and then you drop 4 points down to Celta with 9 points, Espanyol 8 and Leganés 6. Leganés got a 1-1 draw against Real Sociedad. So they've all got new coaches. They're all showing signs of improvement. But these statistics tell you that the bottom three, that far adrift, a third of the way through the season, are already in big trouble.
Yeah, and I look at all three, and I agree totally with you. I don't think the three of them that are down there at the moment are particularly bad. They're finding wins hard to come by. As you said, they've all made changes to their management. It was a really good, impressive result for Aguirre in his first game away to Real Sociedad. So there's no complaints there. That's a step in the right direction. But they're on 6 points. They're seven adrift. The issue for me is I'm looking at teams that you might consider that might get involved in a relegation scrap, and I can't believe the points everyone's got. Because the top teams are lacking the usual points they have, you look further down the table, we're talking Barcelona 25, Valencia are ninth, they're 20 points. Even Osasuna are only 6 points off the top, and they're 10th. So it's amazing when you look at Leganés on 6, Espanyol 8, Celta on 9, and then you're looking at teams like Valladolid on 17 points. Alaves, where they're winning the weekend, they're up to 15. Eibar, you don't assume they're going to be in trouble. 15 points, they're lower than they should be, but they're still 6 points clear of the bottom three. So it's not impossible by any means because there's so many games left. But it's a horrible gap if you're those three teams. I mean, made the change of management. Probably why Aguirre gets the job is because other managers were reluctant to take it on because of the points deficit, the consequences of Leganés getting relegated. You know, they're not established in the top flight. Their third season. If they were to go down, we don't know what's going to happen with the club. We believe it's a well-run club. It does appear to be that way. But a lot of the players that are there now would have to move on. So it's hard to look beyond the bottom three purely on the points they've accumulated. The closest to Betis, and again, we expect them to be doing better and improving in the next few months. So it's tough for the three at the bottom already.
I suppose you'd have to say that Mallorca are a contender still, wouldn't you? 14 points and they're fifth bottom. But they won 3-1 against Villarreal. A bit of a penalty shootout this game, actually, wasn't it? Except there was one star performer who was an 18-year-old kid. You try not to get too carried away, Terry, because we've seen lots of players be good at 18 who don't turn into superstars. But you can see why people are excited about Kubo.
Yes, he is. I mean, it was a strange game because when Mallorca were 2-0 up with both goals from the penalty spot, I thought Villarreal were a better team. And then when Cazorla gets the penalty to make it 2-1, early in the second half, I actually thought it was only one team going to win this. Kubo was the difference. He was the player that eased their nerves with the third goal for Mallorca, which took the game away from Villarreal. They've got all their points at home. So they've got 14 points all at home. So they're banking on getting victories and enough draws in their own stadium to ensure they have a chance of staying up. That's big pressure. But so far, so good. They're keeping out of trouble. We shouldn't forget it's a team that's won two successive promotions. And they've done well to get Kubo on loan. He's on loan from Real Madrid, ex-Barcelona, who's one of those young players that was involved in the reason why there was a transfer ban on Barcelona and Atletico, for instance. So, yeah, big things are expected of him, and it's a good place to be on loan. He looks like he's going to, at some stage, become a first-team regular at Mallorca, which will help his overall progression as a player for Real Madrid. I certainly wouldn't expect him back at Real Madrid in the near future. So playing top-flight football for Mallorca is a benefit to him and to the club.
Athletic beat Levante by 2-1. Postigo for Levante. Muniain with a really good header for Athletic. And then Ander Kappa, who is a player you like, a player that you've advocated for the national team. Terry's got an absolute cracker to win the game.
He did, and he made the first goal as well. The point I make about Athletic Bilbao is they really have to work hard to win games of football, because there is, I mean, at the moment, thankfully, they've got Iker Muniain, who's amongst the goals. But I rarely have seen a team have to work so hard to score goals. They play well in the majority of games. There's so much to admire. Somehow they've got to find at least 15 goal a season centre forward. It's not going to be Iñaki Williams. His attributes don't appear to, he's got so many, but it doesn't appear that he's ever going to be the player that's they can rely on to get 15, 20 goals a season. It's not going to be Raul Garcia. It doesn't appear it's going to be Adewiz anymore. So for Muniain, it's important that he's amongst the goals. And the Kappa made the first goal for Muniain. It's a brilliant run down the wing. Keeps the ball in play. Great cross to the far post. And it's a brilliant header for Mika Muniain. And then he wraps it up, Kappa, with a winner, a late win. They totally dominated Levante. Aitor Fernandez, the goalkeeper, had an unbelievable game. But they're shots on target, they just don't take their chances, and they make life really tough for their supporters, Athletic Bilbao. But it was an important win, and it keeps them in that pack that's obviously chasing their aim to challenge for European football again.
Yes, Real Sociedad are fifth, aren't they? In fact, there were lots of good goals this weekend, weren't they? You already mentioned, you mentioned, didn't you, the En-Nesyri header, which got the equalising. The equaliser for Leganés. I'm just scanning. What have we missed? Oh, we haven't done Alaves.
It was
versus,
a great league, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, and actually, well, let's give him a minute, shall we? And Nesyri, how good is he? He's a player of great potential, isn't he?
Yes, and it's too early to say he should be fulfilling his potential by now, but I think he's going in the right direction. He's very tall, very quick. The leap for the goal is the impressive act in the equaliser against Real Sociedad. He gets so high. When he does that, he shows great technique to power the header home. I thought it was funny. His reaction, he looked like someone had just broken into his house and he just found out, having scored the goal of the equalising goal towards the end of a match. There was no joy. And Aguirre said afterwards, quite funny, he said, "I need to find out what's upsetting him." He obviously hasn't been there long enough to get to know En-Nesyri, and just wondered why on earth this player refused to celebrate a goal, looks angry with the world. And Aguirre came out with, "I need to find out what's upsetting him." So it was a big, big, big goal. Alaves Valladolid. Alaves are another one of those teams that are relying on getting points at home. And they've got the 15, 20 goal striker, it appears to be, in Lucas Perez, which will amaze West Ham and Arsenal fans. This time it was a penalty in the 3-0 win against Valladolid, but there's a nice partnership between him and Osilu. So, again, Newcastle supporters, two ex-Premier League players, have hit the ground running in terms of a partnership. And Alaves fully deserved to win that 3-0 against Valladolid, who actually in this game are quite disappointing.
Yes, and their goalkeeper was very disappointing, wasn't he? He basically chucked one at Thomas Pina.
Yeah,
that went in. So one more game, Valencia versus erstwhile leaders and no longer Champions League contenders. Are they Granada? Talking about good goals, young Ferran Torres finished off the game with a really good goal. I mean, it shows you the equity of the season, Terry, isn't it? That means now that Valencia have drawn level with Granada, 20 points. And as you say, you know, there's nothing to call between the teams, you know, from, I don't know, from the top probably down to mid-table, isn't it? You know, what, 6 points between Osasuna and Barcelona.
Exactly. And for Granada, I mean, it was a great achievement to be top. They've had three straight defeats since going top against Betis. I think it's Real Sociedad, Getafe and Valencia. All games at the start of the season, you wouldn't particularly fancy Granada to win anyway. But I think this was a gutsy performance that I called it when I was working for La Liga TV from Valencia, because they went into the game with seven injuries to seven key players. And yet their starting 11 was remarkably strong. So it just goes to show the squad they have. Then they lose Jeffrey Kondogbia. Then they lose Rodrigo through injury. So they're relying on Manu Vallejo is a young player that played yesterday and played well. Ferran Torres, who got the second goal, played well. Daniel Vaz started at right back. We know he can play midfield, but I haven't seen him play recently in centre midfield. That's where he was shuffled. Jaime Costa had to come on, who's left-footed, and he played right back. So that's why sometimes as a manager, Solardes is looking at it and thinking, I'm already missing all my wingers. I'm playing two young players. Early in the game, Kondogbia gets injured. He's already missing Coquelin, so Vaz had to go and play in there. And it was just that type of performance from Valencia. They deserved the win. It was a close game. Granada fancied their chances. Positive substitutions from Diego Martinez to try and go get all 3 points. But once Vaz scored, the game opened up a little bit. And Ferran Torres with a marvellous solo goal at the end to get the win. And it was a courageous performance from Valencia. And also, I think when you consider the situation that Solardi's walked into, I think actually everything's calmed down. And I think he's doing a reasonable job. Big win in midweek in the Champions League keeps their hopes well alive. And this was a good win in La Liga at the weekend, considering the circumstances. So I thought it was one of the better performances of the weekend for different reasons than what we normally associate with an outstanding performance.
Right, so Spain have got a couple of games coming up. So next week we'll have a quick look at those. And Adama Traore, Dani Olmo in the squad. Neither of those two have got a cap so far. So we'll have a look at them, see how they get on, and we'll take your questions. So have a think about any questions that you've got. Get in touch with us via Twitter or Facebook, La Liga Weekly, and we'll be podcasting again next week. Terry, safe journey home from Barcelona, and speak to you soon.